Light 104.7 and 1570 AM WVTL.
Steve Fitz joins us to talk about the news. Governor Andrew Cuomo getting kudos in general for his budget message yesterday, except maybe from some of the public employee unions, especially the teachers, but I don't quite get it. There's no new tax increases, but he's proposing an increase here, an increase there. How do they do that, Steve?
I don't know. I was thinking of exactly the same thing. It sounds terrifically good. And then you think about it, how is it going to be terrifically good, and you don't know how?
Yeah. Wonder where, it sort of reminds me of that game where they put the little P under one of the...
Yeah, but I do say one thing. He is an aggressive man, and I would hope that he is. I know he is quite a smart guy. He must have some ideas that are still hiding behind the desk someplace.
I think one of the good things about what he did yesterday in terms of the politics or the strategy of it, and I read this, I think, in Michael Gormley's story in the Associated Press this morning, that a lot of the times, governors, maybe I'm thinking specifically, let's say, David Patterson, when they would get to the budget message, you'd be so dry and go on and on and on. But, you know, he's up there fighting. You know, I mean, he's making the budget message sound like a battle cry.
Well, you know, when you look at politics today all across the country, oh, by the way, I do want to say I'm sorry to Congress. I said yesterday that 84% of the people said they were a poor Congress. Actually, it was an 87% that said it was a lousy Congress.
Okay, very good.
Now, in the next 20 years, you know, I'm obviously not going to be around. I wish I was going to be around. I really think there's going to be some incredibly big changes in the United States, how we run this country.
Well, that could be. What do you think will happen?
Well, I think that there's an awful lot going on. For instance, last night those kids were running around the White House and out in Wisconsin. They're pulling the governor back. Take another shot, governor. We don't like it. And California seemed to do a lot of things to make their state a little bit better than anybody else's state. I really think that we're going to have some kind of a change when it comes to how Washington runs the United States of America.
Hmm.
Well, you think we could do that? You think we could get away these people that get all that money from Wall Street? Can we do that? Would the American population be able to pull that off? Yeah,
I don't know, because it's so different. I mean, bringing up the campaign cash, I mean, it's maybe facile or something, or too easy to say, well, they all do it, but they all do. I mean, you know, I frequently will mention, I've been a supporter of Barack Obama, but he takes that money. Here's a race that's kind of outside of our area a little bit over in Massachusetts. The Republican who surprised everybody by getting elected U.S. Senator, he's running against some prominent Democrat, a female Democrat over in Massachusetts. And he said, well, first, let's make a pledge. We won't spend all that money on the campaign. And she was going, well, I don't know. But now they're both spending the money because it's kind of like unilateral disarmament. I think Gingrich used that phrase the other day. Any one candidate is afraid not to do it because he or she will just get crushed by the opposition.
But let's look at the population in the United States. Excuse me. It's growing. There are more folks who are not really wealthy anymore. They're trying for jobs. I just wonder, why can't there be, instead of talking about a Tea Party, supposing each state had a different kind of party. As a matter of fact, one of the guys who was talking about politics yesterday on NBC, they said, we don't need a third party piece of work. We need a third, fourth, and fifth party. I'm still thinking of why that is, but I still can't come up with an idea.
Well, I believe that's true in the European democracies, you know, that they have multiple parties. You know what I mean? And usually a green party, you know, kind of real left wing, and then usually somebody with the word social in it, and they're still sort of left wing. I forget what the word is, the code word they use for right wing, but it's something else.
As we look down toward the South and the next go, I really get a kick out of the new Gingrich. He said that Paul should get out, and the other guy should get out so he could win.
Oh, I see. Well,
I think that's laying it right on the desk, isn't it?
I guess so.
Well, but Milt has 41, Newt has 26, Santorum has 11, and Paul has 10. So it looks right now that Romney's about in.
Yeah, Romney does seem to be the presumptive nominee. Well, and that's maybe a little early to say that. I was surprised. I thought they at the most recent debate. Apparently, they were asking Romney about his tax return. You know, something we hear all the time. He's a wealthy man, and obviously, he's got a tax return. But I guess what they uncovered is that he's paying 15% tax. You know, he's this very wealthy man, but with all the loopholes that people get, he's cut it down to 15%, which is a lot lower than what some people of more modest means are paying. So Gingrich jumped on that and said, well, let's have a Romney tax. We'll make everybody pay the 15% that Mitt Romney pays.
Well, you know, that's true. And it isn't just Mitt Romney, but those people who make a lot of money do spend a lot of money in taxes. But when you look and you say, hey, holy mackerel, that's only 15%. That's what I pay.
Yeah, right. I mean, of course, you know, the people who means, and I go to somebody to prepare my taxes, because even with stuff I do, because I'm involved in a little business with my books and all that kind of stuff, that it's complicated. So you imagine that somebody who's really wealthy goes to really smart people. Not that the guy that does my taxes isn't smart, but they go to really smart people to get their, you know, to get a tax advice.
Over in Italy, the captain of that cruise ship that is no longer a cruise ship is not in jail. He's at home.
House arrest.
Arrest.
Yeah.
And there are 20 missing people already. This is a horrible thing, and to hear that those men were working on that ship, they didn't know how to get the lifeboats out.
Yeah, I mean, and that is unusual, because you talked about this yesterday, that, I mean, it is a tragedy, and it's terrible, but, you know, in terms of numbers of people, it's not, you know, the number of people that would have died in a plane crash, but... I haven't taken a cruise in ages, but anytime I ever took a cruise, the first thing you do is they get you all together and they show you the lifeboats and they show you how they work and so forth.
Absolutely. The first night out, they get everybody out and you have your life jacket on, and then they talk to you about what would happen if something happened. Now, that did not happen on that ship, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't sound right with what that captain was doing.
Now, President Obama will be speaking today to the King of Jordan about what we should do about Syria.
Ah. Well, I heard an interesting story yesterday that Qatar, which is one of the rich Arab emirates over in the Persian Gulf, I think it's where Al Jazeera, the TV network, is located, the news network. He says there, and this would be something, I think it sounds like maybe there's some promise here. He thinks there should be a pan-Arab or an Arabian nation peacekeeping force sent to Syria. You know, not Americans, not British, not French, but the Arab countries should go in there and straighten things out.
That's a very good idea. I like that a lot. That means we don't have to stick our nose in where it really doesn't belong. But I think eventually in the next 5 or 6 or maybe 10 years, they really got to get together, as you just put out, the Arab nations, and say, let's do this now, because every year it seems to get a little more scary.
Well, it kind of dawned on me that the situation in Syria is more of an uprising. Just a little report I heard on the BBC, why it took me so long to grasp this, where the Syrian army allied with the dictator stopped their shelling or declared a ceasefire because the rebels are armed too. They're fighting back. I mean, they have, you know, maybe certainly not the firepower that the government does, but it seem to remind you a little bit of Libya.
Yeah, well, when you look at it from the global idea, then it's oil. When you look for very closely the Arab nations, it's religion.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing, Syria, like Israel, I don't believe has any oil, so nobody's really interested in that.
That's
you know,
right.
Or, you know,
that's
there's
right.
Less interest, I think, among the Western nations. The only interest we have, really, you know, aside from humanitarian, is stability. We don't want, Syria to be unglued, you know, because that could lead to problems with Israel and other places.
How was your ride up today? Was it pretty windy?
Yes, it was, and I went through quite a snow shower. It started it wasn't snowing at all when I left my home in Glenville, but I got down, in fact, I can pinpoint it, down on Cuthbert Street in Scotia. Some snow started to fall. Gee, by the time I was at 890 and on the first couple miles of the thruway, it was a real snow squall, but then it let up by the time I got to beautiful Amsterdam.
And it is a pretty day. It is a windy, pretty day, let's put it that way.
Indeed. Well, Steve, I thank you very much. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
All right, sir.